A podcast of the cinema.
I feel like I swallowed that word.
You want to try it again?
Like it went, linoleum knife. The show's called Linoleum Knife.
It is called Linoleum Knife.
It's a podcast of what?
The cinema.
Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I do a bunch of stuff. Do I just say this at the top of every episode?
You do have to say it at the top of every episode because it might be somebody's first time listening.
Okay, well, welcome.
Everybody doesn't know who we are,
welcome.
What we look like, where we live. What we do for a living, how we love.
Welcome if this is your first time. They know how we look because we're on the logo, but that's from 9 years ago. So we should probably update that photo sometime.
I'm fatter now. Just extrapolate and add more.
My hair is much
add
lighter.
Add more neck.
So I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap. I co-host the Who Shot You podcast at Maximum Fun and the Breakfast All Day podcast / YouTube program, which used to be known as What the Flick, and various and sundry whatever. And you're Dave White.
I also review movies for The Wrap. I make dinner. I go to the post office.
Where you see the likes of Tyne Daly.
Oh, not just Tyne Daly. Sally Struthers.
Ooh.
Last week as well. So Tyne Daly and Sally Struthers.
And Tommy Wiseau.
Not recently.
Okay.
Tommy Wiseau used to go there all the time. Sometimes I do still see him there, but...
It's been a minute.
He may have moved. I don't know. Like he may have
maybe
become,
he's gone back to his home planet.
He may have become very fancy and moved into a better neighborhood.
Yeah. Could be.
I know Sally Struthers lives in this neighborhood because...
Which is not to say that she's not fancy.
I don't know why... I don't know where she lives, but I do know she lives in this neighborhood because she almost ran me over one day. and then this last week I saw her in the post office.
Well, the
and I resisted calling her Babette.
Thank you.
Which she... Listen, she probably would have responded joyfully.
Sure.
To that. Although, like, I do my best to not be...
Don't bother the famous people.
It's more than that. I do my best not to be bothering anyone or anyone bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it just happens anyway. People are bothering me when I go places.
you get into a lot more rhubarbs than I do.
I'm a magnet for people. Someone yelled at me today. I had 3 bags full of stuff. You know, Swedish death cleaning items.
Right.
Junk. Things that, you know, we're never going to sell in a garage sale at Laura's house. Never going to, you know, pop up on eBay. Like, just junk,
yeah.
Right? So I'm like, I'm taking these 3 bags down the block to the thrift store. Thrift store opens at 10. They have a sign in the back. Please drop off items to be donated during store hours.
Oh. Oh, so you're a scofflaw.
Well, it's not, first of all, it's not the law. It's their request.
You're a rule breaker.
I did not have time today to do it between the hours of 10 a.m. and whatever time they close. Furthermore... Leaving 3 bags of stuff at their back door is not going to cause a ruckus. However, old dude with his car parked right next to the door and the back hatch of his car open is standing by the dumpster inspecting a door that someone has discarded.
Like a wooden door?
Outside the dumpster. A wooden door just leaned up against the dumpster, and he's looking at it like, what can I do with this? Where can I take it? And in my head, I'm thinking, how are you going to put that? You're going to tie it to your roof or your car? Because it can't fit in your car.
Maybe he thought it was going to lead him to Narnia.
He was trying to lead me to Fist City. Because, like, I leave my bags at the back door. And he goes, what are you doing?
Besides ignoring the sign.
Yeah. I go, what? He goes, they don't open until 10. I said, yep, I know. He goes, well, you're not helping anyone doing that. And I said, oh. He goes, the thrift store won't get those items if you leave them before 10. I said, oh. He goes, yes, homeless people will come here and steal them. And I said, okay. I pointed to an actual homeless person in the parking lot about 100 feet away. I said, let's say that that person over there wants what's in these three bags. That person can have what's in these three bags. He goes, well, you're not helping the store. He goes, they're stealing things. And I said, what are you doing with that door there? Are you going to take it? He's like, I haven't decided yet. I said, then if it's free, it's not stealing, is it? So, like, and he's going on and on about, well, it's a charity and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, bye. Goodbye.
You don't want to give these things to the homeless people. It's right. For charity.
It might help. I don't know what goes on in the heads of people. Well, no, I do know what goes on in the heads of people. We in West Hollywood are very much like Santa Monica and Beverly Hills in that the police sweep the homeless people eastward.
Mm.
They do this. The reason you don't see huge, long tent cities on the far west side, and I mark the far west side as being West Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Brentwood, Santa Monica. Right.
Although
a lot of West Hollywood people think they're too cool to be called West Siders, but we are.
Okay. I think they do make it all the way out to the ocean, but you're right. In between here and there, the homeless people
they push them along. Yeah. Like, and so they push them all to the parking lot of the laundromat and the 7-Eleven where I go twice a week to do the laundry. I know this because all of my homeless people friends are there. And they all talk to each other and to me.
And
I would sooner talk to them than to this annoying old man who is, you know, dictating, like, decorum to me.
I love that you engage him in Socratic dialogue. Like, forcing him to state his terms. And not just, like, shooting him a look and moving on.
I'm not here to indulge him.
You clearly were, though.
No. I could have
just flipped him off and kept going.
Now, when have I ever opted for the simple, rude gesture when yelling at someone could help?
Well, you don't
know I like to yell at
people. You
don't
do the rude gesture, but I have seen you, like, just stare at the ground and move forward.
Well, listen, he was directly engaging me about a thing I was doing and telling me I was being bad, when in reality, I was not being bad. I was helping someone.
Was there or was there not a sign that said not to drop things off, not during office hours, opening hours?
It is a request. It is not the law.
Okay.
What if that person is sitting in the parking lot needed that vintage Pizzelle maker that I was dropping off? That I've had for 25 years that was given to me by a friend who herself bought it at a garage sale and who said, I will never use this. Would you like to learn how to make a Pizzelle? I said, maybe someday. And then I never did.
It has never Pizzelled.
It has never Pizzelled. Not in my possession. And now maybe that person wants a Pizzelle maker. You don't know. And neither does old man with the door. Everybody can get off my ass. How about that?
I just don't engage. I can't.
If you engage me and you are talking to me and trying to, like, shape my existence, oh, we're going to have a conversation. And it might be a very quick one in which I say, I'm not having this conversation with you. Goodbye. Or it may be a 30-second conversation like the one that I had with this guy, at which point then I will say also, goodbye.
I said good day.
Indeed. So what were we talking about? We were just talking about
had we
what I do for a living.
Gotten to
what
one
I do
yet?
For a living is argue with old people in the back of in the parking lot of the thrift store.
It's a living.
I did not get paid for my 30 seconds of emotional labor in that instance.
Well, you were in a hopped up hurry because we had to make it.
I had to go to the right.
10 a.m. show.
Yeah, we did. We had to go.
Of The Intruder.
We had to go to the Grove. Did they even have a press screening of this movie?
They did.
They did.
Here's the thing. If it screens on a Tuesday night, I can't go.
Correct. Is that when they screened it?
I think that's when they screened it.
They dared show this to the press?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Christy and Matt talked about it on Breakfast All Day.
Did they?
Yeah. Apparently, the press screening was one of the more animated ones since the Halle Berry thriller Kidnap.
That was a good one.
Well, apparently, this press screening, like, people were getting into it.
They were yelling at the screen.
Yelling at the screen, the whole thing.
Were they saying things like, why are all of you so stupid?
I would hope so.
Why is this movie...
because they are all so stupid.
Why is this movie so stupid? Why are these characters so very stupid? Megan Good and
Michael Ealy.
Is it Michael Ealy?
Yeah.
Is that his first name?
Michael Ealy is his name, yes.
Why am I thinking it's some other name?
I don't know.
I know Ealy. When I see his face, I go, oh yeah, that's Ealy. Man person Ealy. Who's been in all the movies.
Michael Ealy. And yes, he has been in all the movies.
So he and Megan Good play a husband and wife. They are rich.
Yeah. If they're rich people in San Francisco, which means they're part of what's ruining San Francisco.
Yes.
Except he doesn't work for Google. He's an advertising branding guy.
Right, which is also
ruining San Francisco.
Okay, so...
they have like a penthouse. It's
yeah,
crazy.
They have a crazy penthouse. It looks, honestly, it looks like a roof of a hotel.
Yeah.
But it's, they buy a house in Napa. It costs $3.5 million.
A huge house.
It's huge. It's old. It's gorgeous. It's got grounds. It's got a
deer in the yard.
It's got a
statuary.
Yeah, like moss covered things. It's, you know.
Literal ivy covered house.
It's beautiful. And so.
It also comes complete with Dennis Quaid.
Who, now I know that Dennis Quaid, the actor, has had substance abuse issues in the past.
He has. He's very upfront about that.
And he is drawing on that experience to play this part because there is not a more cokey performance.
Intense.
This is a compliment. I'm giving him his due here.
Okay.
He is more wild-eyed and crazed in this film than when he played Jerry Lee Lewis.
Well, the character is such a sociopath that he actually has to practice the Dennis Quaid grin in the mirror. The one that's usually charming, but in this one is just creepy.
So he belongs to the house. He's a widower.
He's reluctantly selling the house, but claiming that he's going to go to Florida to live with his daughter.
But he ain't doing any of that.
And he won't go away.
He shows up. He mows the lawn. He shows up. He brings food. He shows up. He wants to make a love. With Megan Good.
Yeah, he wants a do-over, basically. And you find out, like, how he messed it up the first time, you know.
Ended up in, you know, perhaps murder.
Mm.
Or maybe something else. I feel so silly not giving away this movie because it's the dumbest film.
Oh, no, I'm actually going to give away a thing.
Okay, why don't you... Okay, so if you would not like to hear... The
dark secrets of the intruder,
the idiotic secrets of this film, and I'll tell you something, it doesn't matter if you hear the spoilers because you already know going in what is about to happen, what's going to go down.
I'm not going to give away every single thing, but there's one thing I'm going to give away.
If he says it, it's a lie.
Exactly.
And you get that from the early moments of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm going to give away is the thing that I think is a specific thing that I found super annoying. So we meet Dennis Quaid's character when he shoots a deer that is like right behind Megan Good
like
and Michael
10 feet away from them.
Yeah. And they're like, whoa. You know, little baby fawn. But he says, you know, there's a reward on the deer because they're eating up all the gardens, blah, blah, blah.
Right. There are too many of them. They got to thin them out.
Yeah. Right. So over the course of the film, Michael Ealy keeps saying, I don't want guns on my property. I don't want guns on my property. He has this whole monologue about when I was 12 years old, I saw my brother get gunned down in the street. I know what guns can do. I do not want guns around here. And so, of course, for Dennis Quaid, he thinks that's a little ridiculous, but he understands, blah, blah, blah. We get to the climactic moment in which, like, you know, they're finally having to kill or be killed.
Right.
And, like, you know, Megan Good has already stabbed Dennis Quaid once. He's been hit in the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it comes down to this climactic moment of whether or not Michael Ealy is going to shoot him.
Pull the trigger and take him out.
Yeah.
Now, I want to tell the listeners that you yourself were becoming agitated during the final 20 minutes of the film. And every time, as the fighting intensified, every time Dennis Quaid would be down for the count, you would say out loud, remove the head.
Because that's the rule for these movies. If you don't remove the head, they just keep coming back.
It's just the way you were saying it.
I said it once, by the way.
No.
No, I said it one time.
More than once. And your delivery made me feel like it was our anniversary. It was like, there's nothing I like better than seeing a movie with you and having you, like, determinately say, this is going to happen now. This is what should happen. And it's sort of an emphatic command. Remove the head.
Look, I've seen enough of these movies. I know if you don't remove the head, they're just going to keep coming back. So, of course, Dennis Quaid is going to keep coming back unless Michael Ealy shoots him in the face. And Michael Ealy shoots him in the face.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's like,
you gotta do
it. I hate the fact that we have this character who is anti-gun, who is anti-gun for a reason. It's an actual, like, part of his ethos.
Right.
And then the movie decides that, screw that. Real men have guns. Real men are willing to shoot somebody in the face to protect home and hearth. And so, and given that, you know...
Given that Megan Good's character continues to invite this person into the house...
Well, that's a whole other thing.
A rational human being...
like, madam, stop it.
A rational human being would say, like, a third of the way into this movie, you know what?
Maybe you shouldn't come around.
Let's not have you come over anymore.
Let me finish this, though.
I will.
Because, like, this is a movie in which you have black protagonists and a white antagonist, which is never commented upon, like, directly, and I think that's cool. But you have a black protagonist who is specifically anti-gun because of gun violence in his own family.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting twist for a character in a movie this stupid.
Right.
And for a movie to then jettison that just so the audience can be all like, woohoo, to see him shoot Dennis Quaid in the face, I find kind of offensive. Like, well, you know what?
Even stupid movies can have moments of truth. And this...
And then throw them away.
It's just one of those
though.
Accidental moments.
But it throws it away, and I found it offensive.
That's why it's a stupid.
It's like, you know what? Turn that rifle around and butt him in the head. That'll, you know, do something.
Well, that would
bash his brains
out. That would break your rule. You've got to remove the head. So, well, the gun
it's
is
the next
help
best
you
thing.
Remove the head of Dennis Quaid.
Look, they have
great
a whole
balls of fire.
They've got a whole block of like knives down there. I'm sure she's got a cleaver. They could remove the head.
What this film really is, aside from being not trashy enough
to
make me happy, especially from the person who wrote
Obsessed,
which is on Netflix right now. And you guys, y'all, if you have never seen Obsessed, starring Beyonce, Idris Elba, and Ali Larter, and one of cinema's greatest treacherous gays, but an actor whose name I cannot even remember... But he is one of the all-time great...
The evil office gay.
Treacherous gays in cinema. Go watch Obsessed. I'm going to turn off this podcast equipment right now and go do it and ignore finished recording.
No, you're not.
For the screenwriter of Obsessed, I'm expecting delirium.
Yes.
And I'm not getting it here.
No.
I felt annoyed, quite often bored. And I turned to you in the middle of the film and I said, this is a MAGA movie about white people not wanting black people to come live in their neighborhoods.
You know, it is that, but I was also thinking, this is the third movie in about a year that's about black people and houses.
Okay.
There was
horror films?
Well, thrillers.
All right.
There was the one with Paula Patton about the drug people.
Remind me. Oh, yeah. That was terrible.
Terrible. I didn't see it. There was the one with Gabrielle Union. Remember the super smart house that they lock her outside of?
That was fun.
Which was dopey but entertaining.
Bad movie that was also fun to watch.
And now this one.
What was that one called?
I don't even remember. These are stupid movies. I'm sure listeners will know. But the thing is, I think there's like a metaphor at play here that is about, again, I think it is about Trump's America, which is that black people are being forced to feel insecure in their own homes.
Right.
And i.e. their own home being their own nation.
Right.
You know, and not that that's a new thing, but obviously it's been accentuated in the last, you know, since the 2016
because
election.
We have a disgusting garbage president.
Exactly.
Correct.
So that analysis is far more interesting than anything that happens in this movie.
Don't be spending your money. Just listen. Obsessed finally came on Netflix. This one will
eventually
pop up somewhere, too.
The other interesting thing about this movie is that Megan Good's character wears these strangely strappy things for no reason. Like, on moving day, when strangers are carrying boxes into her house.
Decorating the exterior of the house with Christmas lights.
Oh, wait, no, hold on. So on moving day, she's wearing, like, overalls with some very complicated bra underneath and no shirt.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. Then later, she's wearing like a sweater with no back.
It's like a big hole in the back, and it's meant to be sort of alluring.
Yeah, and then you can sort of see, like, again, some very complicated sports happening.
It's a crop top sweater too.
Yes, so it's like
midriff bearing.
So it's basically a shrug with a front.
It's winter in Napa,
right?
But she can't be undressed enough, and everything is very strappy.
And then there's the day where, like, she's having this argument with Michael Ealy over the phone because he's not coming home from work, and she's wearing, like, there's like a neck thing happening, and then I don't even know.
It's essentially a cute little lady harness.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it might. It's not made of neoprene, but it might as well.
I don't know what that was about, other than the people who made the movie were like, let's just get her as close to nude as we can get her.
Because you know, Dennis
and
Quaid.
She said, okay, sure. Fine,
Dennis whatever. Quaid is rocking pure L.L. Bean from start to finish.
Right, which is bad because I wear lots of that kind of stuff. And
we don't need the bad rep.
I just want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm not a murderer. I just dress like this one.
I just want to blend into other things. And that is, anyone who wears L.L. Bean clothes just wants to blend into
be
other
invisible.
Things. Yeah. So that's, let's not get too crazy with demonizing the people who wear
plaid. Never did anything to
beautiful
hurt anyone.
Plaid flannel shirts. Alonzo.
Yes.
I think you were made aware before the screening of Ugly Dolls that I had no intention of joining you for it.
I did glean that because every time over the span of about a month when the subject of the Ugly Dolls movie would come up, you would Pavlovianly pipe up.
that a word? Pavlovian?
I'm going with
Pavlovianly?
It.
Pavlovianly?
You would...
Pavlovish?
You would instinctively pipe up with, I'm not going to see that.
That's right. I needed to remind you.
And I got the message after the first three.
I needed to keep delivering the message.
And it's amazing how often the Ugly Dolls movie did come up in conversation because it gave you so many opportunities to say, I'm not seeing that.
Here's the thing, too. I love K. Kelly Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does she voice the main character in this film, but she sings a terrible song in it.
She sings several terrible songs because this movie contains nothing but terrible songs sung by people you would want to hear sing them.
Right. That's the thing.
Kelly Clarkson.
I love Kelly Clarkson.
Janelle Monáe.
I love Janelle Monáe.
I mean, I have no strong feelings about Pitbull either way, but I know people like him.
Is Mr. Worldwide.
Yeah. You know.
yeah, you're just going, yeah, yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah. No, I know that's a thing. Nick Jonas. The songs are rotten, and that's part of the problem of the Ugly Dolls movie.
There's nothing more disheartening than thinking about a lot of people that you like singing a lot of puke.
Yeah, well, that's
on a bad
that
film.
That's what the original title, I think, and they changed it to Ugly Dolls. So this movie is a compendium of tropes and plot points and messages you've seen in a million other kids' movies.
What are those messages?
It's about how...
What's it about?
How nobody's perfect, but we are all special, and we shouldn't achieve for perfection. We should try to be ourselves.
Okay, fine.
And then, like...
What if what you are is terrible?
Well, they don't get
Shouldn't you
that.
Try to be a little better?
Kelly Clarkson's...
What if you're awful?
Kelly...
Don't you want to be a little more perfect than that?
They don't go into that. Kelly Clarkson's character is a toy that really wants to be loved by a child. She has these reveries of like a little girl playing with her that are right out of Toy Story 2 and the tear-jerking When She Loved Me segments.
Right.
You know, there are all these sort of... I was like checking off movie, like it, like, oh, this part looks like Boss Baby. This part reminds me of Littlefoot. Like it is the least inspired kids movie. Like the one thing that it has going for it, as Matt and I were talking about after seeing it, Matt Atchity, is that the children in the theater where we saw the film seemed engaged.
Well, yeah, because it's a toy that they know.
But still,
and now it's a movie.
But we've gone to kid movie screenings or paid to see kid movies where the kids are super bored and start just running around in front of the screen.
Well, that was Oogie Loves.
No, not just Oogie Loves. It was like Planet 51 or something. Remember that one?
Oh yeah, what was that? Was that the name of that?
I think. One of those terrible, terrible animated
that had
movies.
Exited my brain.
Oh, I
didn't remember that even existed.
I had to do like a worst cartoons list recently, and that came up for that. But yeah, so we've seen like when children are not engaged in a movie, they are not going to be bothered to stay in their seats. Oogie Loves was at least telling them not to stay in their seats.
Right.
But yeah, so the kids of this movie were, you know, at least quiet and attentive. But ugh. Ugly Dolls. It's
about a doll that wants to be loved.
Yeah.
And she feels like she can't be loved unless she's a prettier doll.
Unless she's perfect, exactly.
And the other, they go to a place where there are perfect dolls.
Exactly.
And the perfect dolls are jerks to them or something.
Yes, except for Janelle Monáe because she secretly wears glasses. There's a weird sort of, there's a weird Aryan subcurrent to this whole thing.
When I met you. Everyone that I know said, ew, you're going to date him?
He wears glasses.
He wears glasses. does he also smear poop on his own face? Because he might as well.
Well, the glasses thing just means a lack of perfection, which is
glasses.
A big issue here.
And I said, listen, he's got a great personality.
No one's ever said that about
if
me.
If I can see past
I know this is a lie.
His many flaws and his insane ugliness and those infernal glasses that destroy his face, I understand that he is like an adult garbage pail kid. And yet, my love blooms. Then so can you. You too can accept my choices in life.
And then you sang a crappy song with Kelly Clarkson.
I choose this hideous garbage pail adult with glasses and poop smeared face named Alonzo Duralde as my husband.
Not really quite how I remember.
I shepherded you through life.
Not
after that.
I'm pretty sure
letting
that's,
the golden radiance of my not, perfection.
Yeah. No, I. That story
I would
has
like
some
to remind everyone that the few times that I substituted myself for Alonzo Duralde on the now canceled What the Flick, the YouTube comments ran along the lines of, I had no idea that Alonzo was the hot chick in that relationship.
You're going to just carry that one around with you until we're dead.
It's one of my favorites. I would never read those comments, but our lovely friends used to really enjoy telling me what the comments were about how gross I am. And I took them to my heart. I'll never forget them.
Thanks, I wish, YouTube commenters.
I wish I could meet the person who said that you're the hot chick in the relationship. Just, I want to, not because I'm upset, or I just want to know, like, who is this person? Like, do you have other funny things to say? Because, you know, that wasn't a bad joke. It was not bad.
It's like, a pretty good burn.
The other one, and I've mentioned this on the show before, was that, that guy looks like he goes out and gets drunk and comes home and beats Alonzo every night.
How perceptive.
That's another witty take, hot take about me. So I'm pretty, you know, I want to meet those two people and find out what their lives are like. We can sit down and have, you know, a discussion about inner beauty.
And we can all go see Ugly Dolls
together. And learn. Just going to learn from each other. Do you have anything else to say about the terrible film Ugly Dolls?
I do not. Except that it is indeed terrible.
Okay, so long shot.
Are you going to see it?
Am I going to see what?
Ugly Dolls.
What is that?
It's a movie.
I had forgotten that it was a movie.
We've cleared the decks.
Long Shot is the new film from Jonathan Levine.
Yes.
He directed, what was the cancer comedy called?
50-50.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. He also did Warm Bodies.
Neighbors?
No.
Did he direct Neighbors? He does a lot with Seth Rogen.
Yes. He also, The Wackness is a movie I like a lot, actually.
Long Shot stars Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen. She is the Secretary of State.
Yes.
He is a sort of muckraking journalist.
Yeah.
He is a political, angry, left-wing journalist for a weekly newspaper.
In Brooklyn. He seems to write a mix of op-eds and kind of like investigative pieces.
Right. So he's smart, he's funny, he's angry about, you know, injustice in the world. He's very woke.
He quits the paper when it is purchased by a Murdoch-esque...
Fox News.
Yes.
Fox News buys their paper.
Yeah. A Rupert Murdoch-type press magnate played by Andy Serkis.
And he is... he has to quit. So he goes to his best friend's house. His best friend is played by O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And from, you know,
Ingrid Goes West.
Straight out of Compton, Ingrid Goes West. And his friend O'Shea Jackson says, well, you know what? I'm going to take you out and get you drunk. And we're going to go to this benefit tonight. Boys to Men are playing at this benefit. And I know you want to see Boys to Men and get high. And so they go do it. It just so happens that at this benefit is the Secretary of State, Charlize Theron. It should be noted that the reason they can get into this benefit is that O'Shea Jackson Jr. is a rich business person who owns a company, and
what they do, who knows?
What they do, we don't know. But he's you know, doing business things.
Yes.
So,
corner office.
Rogan and Charlize Theron, their eyes meet at the event, not because they are locked in a love trance, but because they've known each other since they were children and they are finally remembering this.
Well, Rogan knows.
Yeah.
He knows. And she's like, God, that guy looks familiar, but I can't place him.
She was his babysitter.
Right.
She's 3 or 4 years older than he is, and she was his babysitter. So she goes to him, and yeah. She says, how is it that I know you? I know you somehow. And he says, your name is blah, blah, blah. My name is blah, 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 whatever it is.
Fred Flarsky and Charlotte Field.
Okay, yeah, great, sure.
I like this movie. I paid attention.
You're the Secretary of State. I'm a journalist. You were my babysitter. Isn't that weird that we are now running into each other after all these years? So she hires him.
Yes, she wants to run for president. The current president is a doofus played by Bob Odenkirk, who...
A benign Trump.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy, he was a TV actor who played the president and parlayed that into actually becoming the president, but now he wants to leave and go make movies. So he's going to endorse her to take over, to be his successor. And... the polling, you know, people like her. They like her policy. The one area where she is lacking is in a sense of humor.
Yes.
And so she hires Flarsky to be one of her speechwriters.
Yeah.
And so next thing he knows, he is trotting around the globe with her and her closest aides, who are played by June Diane Raphael and...
You have to go look that up right now.
Yes.
I didn't know this actor.
He seemed familiar, but I couldn't quite place him.
Are you going to pause the recording?
Ravi Patel.
So that you can look this up? You're going to just vamp on the mic.
I did. Oh, he's the Meet the Patels guy. Okay.
Okay.
He's, yeah. He was on Master of None, which we are behind on.
Yeah. Continue.
Yes.
Talking.
Anyway, and so she has an insane schedule. She, like, you know, she literally falls asleep standing up with her eyes open. Like, you know, she's just, it's 24 hours on the go.
Right.
And not a lot of people can keep up with her schedule. Not a lot of people are in her world. And suddenly Flarsky is, and they have a lot in common, and he makes her laugh. And bada bing, bada boom, they fall in love.
They kiss. They do a kiss.
They kiss while they're under fire in the Philippines.
Yes.
During an attempted coup.
there's an attempted coup, and they're being shot at with machine guns, and then they kiss.
Yeah.
Which is... as ridiculous as it sounds, and the film knows that it is that ridiculous.
Yeah.
And everything that you could level at this movie...
it gets there first.
It goes, yes, exactly. It tells the joke about itself before you can do it, because it anticipates, with its very title, your disbelief that...
these two people would get together.
That these two people would ever get together. And that is... weirdly enough, that's barely the joke of the film. The jokes in the film, the humor in the film, comes from the really awesome comedic chemistry between Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And how much fun they are clearly having together.
Yes. And she has gotten to do comedy, ranging from like the sort of darker tinge stuff like Young Adult and Tully,
right,
to, you know, the fairly stupid 1 Million Ways to Die in the West. But
right.
She is, oh my God, this is such a, as much as I have always been impressed by so many of her screen performances, this is like impressive funny from her.
Yeah.
She is witty and the banter is sparkling. It is a rom-com in all the best ways.
Yeah.
But she also gets this brilliantly insane sequence where she's on Molly and an international incident occurs and she has to deal with it. And it is the equivalent of the Leonardo DiCaprio can't get into his car scene in Wolf of Wall Street. Like, there is so much physical and verbal stuff going on that she's doing that is
right.
Hysterically funny.
And let's just be real about real life Charlize Theron. The woman dated Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Contemporary right now Sean Penn. Not
right.
Like
not like
hot
80s
young
Sean
80s
Penn.
With Madonna Sean Penn. Sean Penn
21st
now.
Century yeah. Sean Penn.
So
Seth Rogen is
honestly,
an upgrade, frankly.
Yeah, honestly, if you want to describe who's winning the cute contest between Seth Rogen and Sean Penn, you know the answer.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it is to the point where, like, Seth Rogen has windbreakers in this movie that are basically the glasses they put on Rachel Lee Cook in She's All That.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so that they can eventually then later take them off of him
and
put him in a tuxedo. It's like, oh, look at you, Seth Rogen.
The movie even references Pretty Woman.
Yes.
Before you can get there.
Yes.
When he comes out in his tuxedo.
Yeah.
The windbreakers are so vile.
Oh.
It's like
they went out of their way.
She looks at him in one scene and says, "Do you have any clothes that grown-ups would wear?" He's like, "I thought I would just zip this up." I was like,
I love this movie. It's not like perfect. There are a couple scenes that don't quite sell it, and they're not scenes that have to do with the Rogen-Theron romance.
No, they're the scenes that have to do with the political ideas of this film.
Yes.
That honestly, for about 3 minutes, I was like, don't lose me, movie. You're really bothering me.
Much
now.
Like the American President, you know, they figure the innocuous
you mean
way.
The film, The American
like
President?
Like the film, The American
All
President.
Right,
the Rob Reiner comedy, The American President,
right.
Starring Michael Douglas and Annette Bening. The political backdrop of this movie, they make it all about the environment, because that's a thing where you don't have to talk about, like, you know, economic policy or foreign policy,
right,
or like anything that might like turn off. We can pretty much all agree that like trees and bees are good, you know.
Right.
So they very cleverly keep it to that level. And I was like, okay, fine. This is what we're going to do. And this is what movies do and whatever. There's a scene where O'Shea Jackson Jr. gets into a whole thing about his own politics. We were like,
First of all, why are you telling us this? Secondly, is the reason we haven't learned enough about you as a character so that you can drop this weird bomb on us about who you really are? And has everything we've learned about you shaped in a coherent way to encompass this little truth bomb that we just found out about you?
And
why are we having to learn it anyway?
Yeah, I say, and what is Rogan's character supposed to be learning in the process of this that he was doing wrong before?
Like, he wasn't doing anything wrong.
Exactly.
Before.
So there's a few moments.
It is a way to for the film to gingerly back out of Rogan's character's extreme leftiness.
Right.
And to give conservatives in the audience a chance to say, oh, well, okay, so this movie is also maybe kind of for me.
Right.
Yeah.
It just wants to bring us all together.
Guess what I don't want? I don't want to be brought together with, let's just stop film criticism for a moment so I can go on a rant.
Please do.
I don't want to be brought together with right-wing people. Divisiveness is not a problem in this country. The divide in this country is between people who want things to go like in a way that is good for everyone and hateful creeps who voted for Donald Trump and who are still happy with him.
And who are letting and elected people who are letting him run roughshod.
Correct. Therefore, if we are divided, good. I want you to stay over in whatever place you go to and have your crappy ideas about the world. I just don't want you to have any power to enact them. Because if you do, then the rest of us lose and the planet dies.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out, like, you know, Obama was wrong. We are a red America and a blue America. And now it's just a matter of which side wins.
Right.
You know, and so sadly, that's where we are right now. And this movie is trying to peddle some Beto style, you know, middle of the road, kumbaya, let's all bring it together. And that clangs a little false for me at this point in history. Nonetheless, overall,
rant finished.
Yes.
For now.
As a romantic comedy, I thought this was lovely and charming and funny and all the things that romantic comedies are supposed to be. And it made me miss that we don't get these with more regularity. Like,
we don't get them.
We got Crazy Rich Asians last year. We got this one, which apparently got mowed down by Avengers Weekend 2.
Well, of course, but it'll find its way.
I hope so. Yeah. But like, I want more movies like this because it's a fun genre and they should be good and they should be plentiful.
It's very funny. It's pretty smart. It's goofy. Oh my God, there's an Ariana Grande joke that I won't spoil for you, but
it's pretty great.
It's perfect. Yeah. I just want, if I'm going to complain about one thing, I want a film about, I want a film that is set in the world of politics to understand that life is politics.
Right.
That all of life is politics, and that how you live and what you say and where you go and how you engage with other people is inherently political. If it weren't, then this movie would star Charlize Theron and Linda Cardellini or Seth Rogen and, you know,
Zac Efron,
Chris Hemsworth. Okay. So, yeah, something, whatever. And so, when you are queer, your life is told automatically everywhere you go that you're political. You know, you can't have a normal life. Everything you do is part of some political act.
Yeah.
And so, if that's the case, then all straight people's lives are political too. Everyone who lives in this country, your life is political. So if there's a comedy set in the world of that, and it's not going to take strong positions about who its characters are and what they value, then I'm a bit annoyed about that. That's all.
Yeah, no, I think, sadly, that to make a movie like this at all, this is, I'm sure, like, to get a movie like this funded and made, this is as political as it gets.
Right.
And so, you know, at least we
thanks, have Hollywood liberals. You're made of sponges. Wet, wet sponges.
But you know what? I don't think they would. Anybody would fund a movie that was aggressively conservative unless it was pure flicks or something.
Right. Yeah, they do. They do. Those movies are in theaters. Unplanned.
True.
Has made a lot of money.
Right.
So let's just have Longshot be unabashedly leftist. Why not? You're gonna make your money. How much does this cost anyway? This isn't a $100 million movie.
No, but I think the difference is that a movie like, there are lefty versions of what Unplanned is. There are movies that are very sort of, you know, about what they're about and are agenda first. And I think this is a movie that is trying to appeal to a mainstream audience in the world of politics, even though the world of politics is more divisive than it's ever been. And it's doing its best to sort of thread the needle.
Sure.
Anyway, go see it.
Under the Silver Lake is the newest film from David Robert Mitchell.
Yes.
He made It Follows.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a horror film like It Follows.
Right.
It is his version of Southland Tales.
Kind of. Or you know, Inherent Vice.
It stars Andrew Garfield as a young man who
seemingly has no job or means of income or interest in pursuing either, even though he's about to be evicted from his apartment.
But more than that, that's just his, you know, socioeconomic circumstances. Mm. His emotional circumstances are, he thinks he's Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window.
Yes.
To the point where, in the opening scenes, he's got binoculars and he's looking across the apartment complex at other people doing things.
True.
In his apartment building, including a topless woman watering her plants, which is very much like the lady across the way in Rear Window who's not topless but who's wearing like a bra.
Yeah.
And
they call it Miss Body or something.
Yeah. Who's going about her business, you know, right, in her home. And there's a poster of Rear Window in his own home in case you still don't get it.
Oh, there's more Hitchcock to come.
Much more.
Yes.
He meets Riley Keough.
Yes.
As a brief, you know, evening with her. And then she disappears. And he feels like and I say this emphatically, he feels like it's his responsibility to solve that mystery.
Right.
Well, because here's the thing. Do we think it's a mystery to her? Nope.
Is it any of his business?
Is her whereabouts exactly his business? Nope. But he dives in, and he dives in with all the confidence of an annoying young man who is constantly trying to explain the world to you. There is even a friend of his, played by Topher Grace, who is an annoying young man who sits around explaining the world to Andrew Garfield, who never pays attention to him, who's never listening to him. The Topher Grace character is constantly saying things, you know what, man, the world is like this, and we all do this because of this, and this is the secret meaning of it all. And Andrew Garfield's response is, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, I have a mystery to solve. You know, none of the young men in this film understand that they're awful, including Andrew Garfield's character.
Oh, totally.
I firmly believe, however, that the movie understands.
Oh, yeah.
That these young men are awful.
No, I think so.
And that the women in their lives that they are sort of engaging with, who don't have any personalities at all, are simply being sidelined by the characters. You know, like, the movie understands that these women are being treated like props, like, by the young men.
They have rich inner lives,
but we'll never know what they are.
But Andrew Garfield's telling this story, and so since he's never going to ask, we're never going to know.
We're never going to know. Right. He's obsessed with finding out the secret of a song that he hears being played by a local band,
right,
called Jesus and the Brides of Dracula.
The song is performed by Silver Sun Pickups.
Yes. He's also obsessed with finding out, you know, the clues that will lead him to this mystery. So everything begins to feel like a message,
yes,
to him. Everything is coded, and he has to decode it.
Yes. Even like a map on the back of a cereal box is actually revealing something about secret locations of things. And
instruction books for, you know, Zelda video games.
Right.
Everything that he encounters becomes, you know, another piece of the puzzle. And the film takes you down this labyrinth with him. But the film doesn't care whether or not he solves this thing or not. The film is more interested in showing you what a dumbass he is. And it goes on for a long time.
Yeah, as I say, part of its lack of interest in resolving things is its 2-hour and 20-minute running time, which you feel, because it is aggressively laconic, this movie.
One of the reasons that I believe it exists is to sort of excavate millennial malaise. Now, every generation of young people experiences a kind of malaise.
Sure.
Based on what's going on around them. And I think that one of the big, you know, issues affecting people, you know, 30 and under, or 35 and under, is this idea that, you know, what if there's no future, right? What if, you know, the baby boomers ruined it, and the Generation X people were like, we don't know what to do, we're just going to not participate. And that, all that stuff gets fed into, you know, younger people who, this guy is absolutely aimless and can't commit to anything other than this weird little, you know, conspiracy that he has decided to latch onto. Ultimately, one of the sicker jokes in the film involves people who give up and literally entomb themselves with rich people. Like,
Pharaoh style.
I guess I'll get a little money until I die in 6 months. Like, it's that weird and that perverse. And as frustrating as this film is on all of these levels, you know, every time there was a little payoff like that, I would think, okay, I'm going to keep watching for another 10 minutes. And that's what kept me going to the end. And I went through all the emotions that I could go through while watching it, thinking, this sucks. This is boring. Why is this happening? Why are these people behaving this way? Oh, I see why these people are behaving this way. Now I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this movie, and like, I admire it and I'm exasperated by it, and I know what it wants to do, but even if it's doing what it wants to do, it's still not a particularly entertaining film. I don't know. I mean, it is not lacking in ideas. So I'll certainly give it that.
Oh, it has
much.
A lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of goofy things to look at, and a lot of cool Los Angeles locations.
Definitely.
And for people who live in Los Angeles, it's one of those movies where you're like, oh, they're here, they're there, they're, you know,
yeah,
I know that place. I live around the corner from that.
I wish I had mentioned it, because actually we had a question on Who Shot Ya, where somebody called in and said that they were visiting LA soon for the first time, and
right,
what are our favorite LA movies, and I should have mentioned this one, because it does shoot the city in an interesting way, and you know,
Tangerine.
Yes, that's also good.
And most episodes of the S Club 7 in Hollywood show.
I forgot to mention that.
Come on now.
We talked about everywhere. We talked about LA Story and The Long Goodbye and a few other ones. But anyway, so yeah, my take on this movie is, ask me in 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years from now, I'll probably watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, this is... I'm going to say right now, I think this is a good film, and it's very strange.
Yeah.
And it meanders the same way that its characters meander.
Yes.
And it's annoying in the same way that its characters are annoying.
Exactly.
And it's despairing in the same ways that its characters are despairing. All the while kind of making you want to chuckle as you watch it, but feel a little bad about chuckling.
There were certainly times. This is definitely one of those movies where
it's a lot.
I was reminded of the song from Gigi, "I'm Glad I'm Not Young Anymore."
Right.
All this running around and going to rooftop pool parties and whatnot. I was just like, ugh, it just all seems exhausting.
Do you want
to
feel sorry for young people? Watch this movie.
But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it is, you know, I think there is a specific malaise of you know, we talk about this being the one of the first American generations that doesn't think they're going to have it better than their parents did.
Well, we knew that we weren't going to have it better either.
Yeah.
We knew the baby boomers had consumed everything. There was nothing left for us. But we were so small in number,
right,
that no one cared. All they cared about in the media in the 90s, when people our age were in their 20s and entering their 30s, was... You guys just complain all the time. You're such a bunch of lazy whiners. And
look
blah,
at these
blah, blah.
Slackers.
Look at these slackers. And now the media is doing exactly the same thing to the millennials and to what's after them. The Gen Z kid. Is there? Do they have a name yet?
I don't even know.
Anyway, it's not. We're all doomed.
Moving on.
The Burial of Kojo.
Yes.
Is the first feature from a director named Blitz Bazawule.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm saying that name right or wrong.
I was about to ask.
He was born and raised in Ghana. He's a musician. Now he lives in New York. Ava DuVernay's distribution company, Array,
yes,
is responsible for bringing this film.
And it is streaming on Netflix.
They brought it to Netflix. It's the kind of movie that, if it had gone theatrical, It would have played a week in New York, and it would have played a week at the Lemley Music Hall in Los Angeles on a half schedule.
Right. And then gone out to like a few larger cities and then universities and museums.
Yeah. You would perhaps be forgiven for thinking that all foreign language films are in French.
They're not.
I mean, you know, that's the country we get the most from. You know, when we import subtitled films
yes.
into American movie theaters, they're from France, pretty much. Germany, Italy, yeah. Spain.
Western Europe.
Those are the big four. And sometimes, you know, well, you know, Russia, back when Tarkovsky was alive.
Right. And Asia, obviously.
Correct. But I'll tell you something. As strong in terms of, you know, quality as the films from Asian countries are, fewer than a handful of directors who get their films into theaters over here.
True.
You know, Jia Zhangke, Hu Xiaoshen, Hong Sang-soo,
Park Chan-wook Park.
Park Chan-wook, Lee Chang-dong, Lapis Chau-pong, Chai Ming Lang.
Yeah. Oh, did you say Wong Kar-wai?
Wong Kar-wai. Mm. I just butchered every one of those names, but probably, you know. So. And that's all heavy-duty art house stuff. And they don't burn up the box office in the United States. There's a core group of, like, people who go to see those films.
Like, even Los Angeles doesn't always get...
Right.
Like, they're more likely to open in San Francisco...
They are.
...than in Los Angeles.
Yes. Anyway, we're off track. But yes. Still, ain't nobody running around trying to see movies from Ghana most of the time.
True. Or so offering them anyway.
The fact that this is bypassing theatrical and going to Netflix means all of y'all can watch it.
Yeah.
Right now, if you want to. It is about a young girl who lives with her mother and father in Ghana. In kind of a magical atmosphere. Like, the entire film is very...
magical realism.
Is very dreamlike and very, very much indulging in a kind of magical realism. It's a village on water. The houses are built on stilts. Mother and father, they begin life happily, but they stop being happy after a while. The mother leaves... Comes back, leaves, comes back, leaves, comes back. The father doesn't do much. Kojo doesn't do a lot. And then an uncle shows up. And the uncle is trying to entice the father into, trying to entice Kojo into coming to an illegal mine.
Right.
They're going to make a lot of money. Then bad things happen. And what you realize as the film progresses, and it's a short movie.
It's 80 minutes.
80 minutes, yeah. Is that what you're seeing might not be what's happening? And this child is remembering things in a way that might not be real, or she is... in the process, as a child experiencing traumatic situation, she's inventing a magical world to create a different reality for herself.
Not unlike the heroine of Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Not unlike that, however.
Yes, the movie is not trying to sell you awfulness as charming.
Right. This film does not exist in squalor. Like Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Right.
And it's not trying to tell you that, you know...
Squalor is better than civilization.
Squalor is better than civilization for this child who suddenly, you know... In Beasts of the Southern Wild, this child becomes an orphan.
Yeah.
And yet the film is suggesting that... Oh, but she'll be better off on the garbage dump. Like,
better to be queen of the garbage dump.
Yeah,
than...
exactly. And that was one of the reasons why I hated that movie.
Yes.
So very much. And so this one is different.
Yes.
This one is about a child who, you know, has love and has a place to be with a mother that is sometimes committed to it, sometimes not. And a father who loves her, but who, you know...
is flawed.
Is flawed, and tragedy strikes. This is a lovely little movie about a corner of the world that the Western world doesn't really... think about or pay enough attention to. Certainly not the art from that part of the world. And... as much as it's easy and fun to complain about Netflix, dominating things lately, we get this.
Yeah.
And we get Happy as Lazaro, and we get, you know, Roma.
They've got a Spanish movie coming out this month that I really want to see called Despite Everything, about four sisters going on a road trip. It's a woman-directed movie. If you dig a little, these aren't the movies that are going to necessarily pop up on your, you know...
immediate
Your first thing, screen. Yeah. But, you know, if there's always articles every month, like, here's what's coming in May. And so, like, you know, do a little legwork and see a movie from a part of the world. You know, there's Indian films every month. There's a lot of different Spanish-language films from different countries.
And Netflix isn't... creating these films.
No, they're just acquiring
them. But they're
them.
Picking them up, and they're showing them, and that's something.
You mentioned the dreamlike qualities of this one. I kind of watched this a little later at night than maybe I should have.
Did you start to doze and have a dream yourself?
I didn't doze, but I was sort of in that like halfway there mode, and that actually kind of, I think, worked well to the film's benefit. It was sort of like watching Cemetery of Splendor. It does sort of weave this dream.
Cemetery of Splendor, Mr. Weerasethakul is encouraging you to doze off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, totally.
It's a movie about sleeping.
Yeah. He expects it to happen. He said as much in interviews where, like, it is okay to fall asleep and to dream in my films. And I thought, okay.
Done and done. But yeah, this is a beautiful movie. People should check it out.
What's your DVD pick?
Well, Ugly Dolls, also like the much better Long Shot, got trounced this weekend by Avengers. People did not go to see it. It is not successful. And it got me thinking about unsuccessful animated films that I do like. Because, you know, Pixar always brings the hits, and, you know, a lot of other studios generally can... you know, have pretty good track records. But every so often, I'll see an animated film that I really love, and then it just kind of doesn't land the way that it ought to. And so I was thinking about Mr. Peabody and Sherman, which is the feature-length adaptation of the Jay Ward short cartoons that were part of the Rocky and Bullwinkle show. A movie that I was hesitant about going in because I have a real affection for the old shorts, and, you know, a lot of times... When they start dredging up the, you know, your beloved childhood favorites, that can go wrong in a lot of ways. But I found this movie really charming. It really had a lot to say about adoptive parenting, which kind of took me by surprise. Some very clever jokes that are aimed at the parents, but that aren't, like, smutty or any way. They were just smart, you know, like, genius Mr. Peabody whips up a cocktail called the Einstein on the Beach.
I remember that now. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Anyway, it's a charming movie, and it kind of just sort of came and went, and people don't talk about Mr. Peabody and Sherman, so...
they do not.
Check out Mr. Peabody and Sherman, is what I'm saying.
Well, now I feel like I should do something else like what you just did instead of what I'm about to say.
No, this is a movie that you just saw for the first time. You should talk about it.
So, this is coming on the Criterion Channel very soon, like this month.
Mm-hmm.
They're about to drop it this month on Criterion Channel if you have it. But that's not where I saw it. We have a local TV station.
Well, is it that Movies! Exclamation point
that
one?
Plays old movies.
That's not local. That's sort of like...
is that on the cable?
It's syndicated.
Oh, is it syndicated?
It's terrestrial, but it's syndicated.
Okay. But anyway, They show movies with commercials.
Yeah.
The old, like you used to do in the olden times.
Yeah, like the movies are uncut, but they throw in commercials. It's very
When
weird.
I was a kid, this was how I watched
That's old movies. That's how you saw movies on TV. Yeah.
When I saw movies on TV, old movies on TV, old black and white ones, they were on the local station, and they were cut up. They were chopped to pieces, yeah. And they were with commercials.
This channel also, that's where I finally got to see Who's Minding the Mints.
This channel does not cut the films.
No.
And they do not pan and scan them or anything like that. Yeah. But there are commercials.
Yes.
And it's all for like a walk-in bathtub and, you know, life insurance policies. You cannot be turned down.
To the Your Old channel.
Would you like to know what life is like with today's AARP? Would you like to know when you begin to get discounts on things? Guess what? I'm turning 55 next month.
Yes.
Oh, so many discounts start kicking in at 55.
Ooh.
When you're 50, you turn 50, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AARP finds you.
They
start finding you and they send you the mailers.
They never found me, and I don't know if that's just because you got there
first.
Because
I joined right away and gayed you into
it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Mrs. Dave White.
You are Mrs. Dave White. I sent in my $16 because I wanted my card so that I could get discounts. Now, the little disappointing thing was that at 50, you don't get a lot of discounts.
No.
But they start kicking in at 55. And then each year after that, more and more. Like, you get to be 60, oh, it really starts coming in. By the time I'm 65, everything's going to be free because of my AARP card.
Yeah, that's how it's going to work.
Can't wait.
That's what life is like.
Anyway. What was I saying? Okay, so anyway,
the
movies channel. They showed In a Lonely Place, and TiVo picked it up. And the reason TiVo picked it up is because I have Martha Stewart in TiVo. She's a keyword because I want to get her baking show and her cooking show that's on PBS. But there's an old actress from the 40s and 50s also named Martha Stewart. She's still alive. She's 96 years old. Ooh. And she plays a young woman in this film. But In a Lonely Place is from Nicholas Ray. It stars Humphrey Bogart and Gloria Graham. It is a... it's a noir.
It's a noir.
But it's also set in Southern California, so it's pretty sunny.
Well,
there's not a lot of dark alleys and nighttime things going on.
It's spiritually a noir.
It is spiritually a noir, that's for sure. He plays a screenwriter who has not had a hit since the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he meets a hat check girl at a fancy restaurant where he goes and gets drunk and brawls with people.
Yeah, he's got anger issues.
She winds up murdered, and he becomes a suspect. But his alibi is Gloria Graham.
Yes.
Who lives across the way.
Across the courtyard.
Across the courtyard at the apartment building that is literally up the street from our home.
I mean, they didn't shoot it there.
They didn't shoot it there, but the set is modeled on this old apartment building that Nicholas Ray moved into when he first came to Los Angeles.
Oh, see, now the story I heard when I saw Curtis Hanson screen this film at the TCM Film Festival years ago was that that he was living there while he was divorcing Gloria Graham.
That is not what Nicholas Ray says.
Okay,
Nicholas Ray himself says that he moved into this apartment building when he first got to Los Angeles. Humphrey Bogart lived around the corner on Fountain at the Oro, the one with the
Coppa di Oro or whatever.
Yeah. And
not the company, it's something else. I know what you mean. Yeah,
you know which one I'm talking about. Anyway, so the set is based on that old apartment building,
and Ray
and it's
Graham,
literally on our street.
But Ray and Graham were in the process of getting divorced while making this movie.
And Nicholas Ray says that he slept on set
when
they were making this film. Yeah. Anyway, I cannot stress to you enough how utterly painful and devastating this movie is.
It's hard. It's dark.
Because he's a suspect, and he's got rage issues.
Yeah.
And you think, he might have done it. And then you think, maybe he didn't do it. And then you wonder where the film's going. And in the last 10 minutes or so, you think you know where the film is really going to go. And then it pulls the rug out from under you. And it's the best unhappy ending. One of the best unhappy endings that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
It is an essential film.
Yeah.
And if you have the Criterion Channel, they're fixing to show it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the Criterion Channel, it's available all over the place.
Yes. Or maybe it'll turn up again on movies.
Or TCM or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a TCM staple for sure.
So anyway, In a Lonely Place.
Yes. Which, by the way,
what?
Fun fact, you know, the Smithereens have a song.
They do, and the lines come from the...
Yes, yeah. the I was born the day song. I met you was from
the lyrics movie, are yeah. from dialogue in the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Maxwell has a letter for us.
Mm-hmm.
Not the famous R&B singer of the 90s. At least I don't think so.
It is not. Is he alive, that Maxwell?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yes, he's alive. You're thinking of D'Angelo, who is also alive, but who had some troubles.
Well, Maxwell,
for quite a while.
Look, it's been... Maxwell was famous 20 years ago. He could conceivably be not alive, and it wouldn't be the weirdest thing ever.
Maxwell is alive and well and still singing. D'Angelo came along at the same time and had some troubles for a while, but he's still around.
I'm not confusing the two.
Well, I bet you are.
I know you think I don't know anything, though. Maxwell was like somebody's son at a label.
I don't know about that.
And like, you know, Michael Jackson wrote his biggest hit.
I don't know any
and
of
his
those.
Only hit.
I don't know any of those details.
Okay. So don't tell me.
Anyway, this other Maxwell.
Yes. Hi.
You probably don't remember, but earlier last year, I sent you an email in regard to recommendations on films pertaining to bisexuality.
I do remember that.
First, Dave, my name is Maxwell, not Matthew. Earlier, I said Matthew in the other email because at the time, I was afraid people in my life were listening to this podcast and would put two and two together and realize it was me emailing when at the time I wasn't ready to talk about this with anyone. I apologize for that confusion. Secondly, I just want to thank you guys for your positive comments. At the time, I was going through a very confusing stage in questioning my sexuality. I knew without question that I was attracted to women, but there were also definite feelings there for men as well that I was not allowing myself to confront, probably because of my staunchly conservative and religious upbringing. Mm. Oh, dude.
Hmm.
We're brothers. However, moving out of my home state of Alabama and to Orlando, Florida last summer began a very eye-opening year. And I realized that while I'm still trying to figure myself out, it's okay to be confused and to find yourself. Basically, what I'm saying is, thank you for being my spiritual guide.
Oh.
On the subject of Alonzo's recommendation of the movie 3, I did see the movie and found it to be beautifully told and affecting, and even with a few moments that accurately depicted what I feel at times in being torn between attraction. I love the show. I listen to it every week. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you, Maxwell.
Thank you, Maxwell. By the way, if you miss
everybody's
the,
bisexual.
If you miss to some the or if you miss the earlier letter, the movie 3 in question is the one directed by Tom Tykwer.
Yes,
I figured there's probably a lot of movies called 3. I just wanted to clarify.
And I have no idea if what I just said was true, but I'd like to think it is.
Yeah, you go with that.
Okay. This one is from Glenn. Hello, Glenn. Local friend, Glenn. Yes.
If you're a Patreon subscriber
neighbor, Glenn.
That gets Linoleum Nights, you saw/heard Glenn play You Don't Know My Life with us.
That is correct. He says, I've always felt alone in my dislike of Claire Denise Beautrevaille.
You are my brother.
Well, you and Alonzo can go sit in a dark room by yourselves then. How about that? Sure, it's photographed beautifully and has a certain grandeur to it, but like Alonzo, I was bored out of my skull and felt nothing watching it. So thank you, Alonzo, for making me feel less alone in the world. Sorry, Dave. Yeah, you should apologize.
You're
to me.
You're welcome.
To me personally and to Claire Denis.
She's fine.
I truly do treasure your opinions on film and food and television, but I think I would rather flip through a Bruce Weber coffee table book than see this movie again. At least with the latter, I can experience the homoeroticism at my own speed. speaking of which, I've always wanted to be knifed, but I couldn't think of a unique list to present until now. In no particular order are my favorite male homoerotic movies.
Ah, okay.
I've limited them to films which aren't explicitly LGBT, but ones which gave me those man-on-man feels. And I didn't want the list to be, obvious with Top Gun or Fight Club, so here goes.
All right.
Number one. Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Well, I mean, yes for the homoeroticism, no for the movie, but I'll sure, yes, why not?
That movie has Thelma Houston's Don't Leave Me This Way in it.
No, it and it has...
And that is why that song was a hit.
It has very sexy Richard Gere in it, but it also has like crazily reactionary ideas about the sexual revolution and women.
He gives little comments.
Oh, okay.
And I don't always... a lot of people do this when they send their lists in to be knifed. Mm-hmm. Some people leave little comments or they leave like paragraphs of mm-hmm. stuff. And sometimes I read little snippets of that. Sometimes I don't. So that's what I'm saying. Okay. I might read some of your little comments here. Maybe not. And I'm not saying little comments to denigrate...
Ooh, your little comments.
You know what I mean? Like little short...
Brief comments.
Brief is the word I'm looking for. Richard Gere in a jock strap with that glowing knife. Go ahead and stab me. I don't care. Rollerball.
Huh. Really?
The original.
Yeah,
with
of course.
The shower scene.
Oh, yeah. John Beck.
Starship Troopers.
Oh, with the shower scene.
That's what he says. With another shower scene. Casper Van Dien.
Mm-hmm.
The Sisters Brothers. The silent intercutting of close-ups between Jake Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed was swoon-worthy.
I will have to look at that again.
To Live and Die in L.A.
Huh.
William Peterson with his bow-legged strut in those very tight jeans. Midnight Express.
Oh. Yeah.
Everybody talks about the shower scene, but I loved it when they were doing yoga together. The Fast and the Furious. Mm. Because family is everything. Number eight, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Oh, hell yeah. Freddy's Revenge.
He says, I worked on this one.
Ooh.
And we knew it was gay even then, despite what the powers that be insisted.
No. Oh.
Number nine, Altered States. Remember when William Hurt used to show his butt a lot in movies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like eyewitness era, William Hurt was a total snack.
Number 10, The Year of Living Dangerously.
Hmm.
Despite what he became, you couldn't escape Mel Gibson's jaw-dropping beauty. And in this one, I wanted to be Sigourney Weaver as they made out in a speeding car.
That is a terrific movie.
He says, it may have been directed by a straight man, but the male gaze here was unavoidable.
Yeah, early 80s Mel Gibson was quite the thing to look at.
Also, we have... Listen, I'm not going to say thank you for this. But I am going to say, I'm glad that some of you are out here obeying my commands to leave us 5-star reviews. On
wait, first of all,
Apple
we have slow your roll, Holmes.
What?
We have to tell Glenn that his list is 100% knife.
Glenn, your list is 100% knife.
Well done.
Yes.
And now
we got some 5-star reviews because I demanded it.
Yes.
You obeyed.
You invoked the universe.
Yeah. Ashley, the teacher mom.
No. Good for you.
Says, if you want your hour-long commute to feel like a treat rather than a chore, this is the show for you. It's funny and delightful, personal, informative. You will feel like your two best movie critic friends jumped in the back of the car to keep you company on your drive. You also will get some inspiration to cook Sunday dinner. It's weird recording this on a Monday afternoon because there's no Sunday dinner happening.
No. On Sunday, we record...
And I don't even know what we're going to have for dinner. Like, this might be like... This might be like leche y algo night. Fine. You know, like a
bowl of cereal.
Bowl of cereal. Like, who knows?
By the way,
it's been a long day of very much busy business.
On Sunday, we recorded a special episode with Manola Dargis. If you haven't listened to that yet, please go do. It's wonderful.
Well,
she's wonderful.
She's wonderful.
We're whatever.
Yeah. Lizard 260 says, I would have their babies if I didn't hate kids and if they weren't gay.
Fair enough.
These are learned and delightful podcast co-hosts who discuss recently released films, both big and small. The audio quality is homespun.
I'm going to borrow that.
We have a home. Listen, we're just folks here. We're just folksy folks with homespun audio quality.
I recently told somebody, yes, forgive the audio quality. We've only been doing this for 8.5 years.
The knowledge they are dropping is legit. If you like movies, give them a listen. I think this screen name is Same Mistake Twice.
Okay.
I think that's what is what, because it's Same Mistake Twice. So that's same mistake twice. Okay. Like a conversation with those closest to you sitting around a dinner table. Well, that's
literally what this
is. That's exactly where we are right now. Sometimes there's bickering and teasing, but there is always love and movies. Jackal 12334. Maybe it's Jackie. Hang on.
Don't let's be insulting here.
Grandpa needs his
cheaters.
Reading glasses here. No, it's Jackal. David and Alonzo share an easy, funny, incisive banter that makes their conversations fascinating on all things film. They offer unique perspectives on cinema that you cannot really find elsewhere, and we are all the better for it. Long live Linoleum Knife.
Oh, wow. Well, y'all, that was lovely. Thank you so much for those. And
hang on. There's one
there's
more.
There's more? Oh, man.
You said there were five, and you gave me five, okay, and I just read the fourth.
I lost count. Sorry.
Coconut the Cat.
Okay.
Says, I wish Dave and Alonzo were my godparents. A warm hug of a podcast, even when they're talking about those Claire Denis movies.
Y'all are great. Thank you for those reviews. We appreciate it. And hey, if you would like to have your review read on the show, go leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts.
And
we will make that happen.
Yeah.
So hey, thanks for listening. If you want more of this kind of thing, and why wouldn't you? Maybe you should go check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife, where we offer 3 additional shows for our subscribers at various levels, including LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast of the food, a.k.a. a food podcast hosted by 2 film critics, and Linoleum Nights, where we work blue and discuss...
We just said that one time where we work blue. We speak like human beings who are adults.
It's the not clean adult podcast. Conversations.
We've kept this one reasonably swear free for almost 10 years. And we're not stopping now.
No. But if you
want to hear the swears and
Linoleum Nights.
You want to hear us really go in on politics and religion and that man and, you know,
dicier topics.
Sometimes we don't do that at all. Sometimes we just ramble about, you know,
what we heard on the Yacht Rock station.
Yeah.
That was a whole episode. Anyway, on top of that, we've got stuff and things, you know, t-shirts and magnets and tote bags. And we have monthly hangouts where we watch Netflix films and daily recommendations. And
this month's LK Club meeting, the hangout film, is this Saturday night.
Yeah.
Saturday night, the 11th at 6 p.m. Pacific, we're going to watch East of Eden.
On Netflix.
And if you're at the
12 and up.
The $12 level, you get that.
Join us in the Google Hangout for that. You
can participate.
Yes.
We'll chat with you on the internet for like 2 hours.
We have a cool thing called Private Knife where you give us a topic and we give you a 15 to 20 minute personalized podcast about that topic. We reserve the right to veto your topic. And so, yeah, all kinds of opportunities. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Please check it out. Also, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney on Cancel Too Soon. And, of course, also on Critically Acclaimed, their podcast on the Schmoes No Network. And so, of course, give a listen to the Schmoes shows. Also, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can follow this show at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Again, do leave us those reviews on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com and Spotify and Google Play. Thank you, Blue, as always, for our theme music. Go check out all of his works at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. And, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Maybe you've got a list you want to be knifed, or you have other insights or questions or complaints, whatever. Send it our way. I guess that's it for this week. We'll be back next time with whatever the hell's opening next weekend. I don't know. Stuff. Some
things, movies.
Some movies or other.
Cinemas.
Yeah, all of that. So until then.
Goodbye.